हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
76. In this regard, the example may be given of gold that has not been molded, and gold that has been molded into various ornaments. A gold earring and the gold in a mine are different only as cause and effect, otherwise they are the same. The Vedanta Sutra describes that Brahman is the cause of everything. Janmadyasyayataha, Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Everything is born from the Supreme Brahman, from which everything emanates as different energies. None of these energies, therefore, should be considered false. The Mayavadi's differentiation between Brahman and Maya is only due to ignorance. Right? So they're thinking they're being very intelligent, but actually it's due to ignorance that they're making this distinction. Because they actually don't know the Lord and His energies. They don't know who God is. You know, they have some understanding of Brahman, but it's very minimal. Only just the unlimitedness and the unchangingness. That's it. More than that, they have absolutely no understanding of Brahman. Srimad Veera Raghavacharya, in his Bhagavat Chandra Chandika, describes the Vaishnava philosophy as follows. The cosmic manifestation is described as sat and asat, as chit and achit. Matter is achit, and the living force is chit. But the origin is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in whom there is no difference between matter and spirit. See, this is the important element. Because for him, it's all his energy, it's all Brahman. It's just that he's using that because that gives the effect on the living entities that they're looking for, that a life separate from Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say you have some people who are making trouble, so then you put them up in your basement. But for you, it's just part of the house. You understand? For them, it's different. But for you, it's just part of the house. Right? You live upstairs. You don't live in the basement. But for those who can't live upstairs properly, they stay in the basement. Does that make sense? So, this is the whole point, is the gold and the gold mind, they're actually the same. Though one is the origin and one is coming after. Right? So the gold is made out of, means the gold ornament's made out of the gold and the gold mind. So Krishna's the mind. So there's no difference. But you can tell a difference, you know, by the perception, but factually, there's no difference. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's the person that has all these energies. It's the person who's expanding. So we're looking more at the person aspect rather than simply the aspect of his God and how he's doing all these things. So that's where the confusion comes in. Right? Because he has three features. So because of this, then you have these different aspects, but it's all the same. So that's where the difficulty comes in. So then also then when we're taking material and spiritual, we're trying to separate the secondary. But the point is that the same secondary used for Krishna is devotional service. The same secondary not used for Krishna is Maya. The same senses used for Krishna is devotional service. The same senses not used for Krishna is sense gratification. The same intelligence and intellectual process used for Krishna, that's deliberation. The same process used not connected to Krishna is called mental speculation. Right? Because we always have to remember is that the whole process is about the consciousness. So if we're not conscious of our consciousness, then you try starting with the subtle body. If that's not there, you start with the gross body. Right? But there's a connection between all of them. So therefore, the activities of the gross body are based on the subtle body, which is based on the consciousness. So the natural thing, change consciousness, you change the other things. That's why Prabhupada says it's automatic. You just change the consciousness, and automatically what needs to be adjusted will adjust. Does that make sense? You know, it just happens. Just like, let's say, there are three people sitting on a bench, right? There's still a little space. So actually, four people could sit, right? Unless you're on the Krishnagar train, and that's five, right? And so, four people can sit, right? So, but where will they sit? One will sit at one end, one will sit at the other one will sit basically exactly in the middle. What if the fourth person comes? Right? It's automatic. They'll just adjust. So that's it. When you change the consciousness, then the mechanics of it automatically adjust to match. But if we take it that, no, it's the external that is actually the secondary, that's the real thing, we won't understand this. It means you can't understand this. Yes.
Can you say that primary and secondary is from the perspective of the jiva, whereas from the perspective of the Lord, it's only primary for him? Because he is everything.
Yeah, it's only primary for him. But it's not that he can't tell the difference between things, because you have the Kriya and the Jnana Shaktis. Yes. Yeah. That's what it says here. For him, there's no difference between matter and spirit. Okay. Is this kind of clear? Yeah? Okay.
So in short, consciousness...
Yeah, it means pure devotional service because the consciousness is pure. It's not the activity. It's the consciousness. So naturally, if the consciousness is pure, then you try to keep the attitudes and moods and all and qualities used then pure, and the mechanics and the environment pure. That's the point. It's a natural thing. It's just like, let's say if you're sick and you can hardly move about, anything you do, you're not going to worry about too much detail. But as you know, so let's say certain things, you'd normally put them back or this or that, you'll just use them. But when you get healthy, now you'll start putting everything back in place. It just naturally matches. Right? That's the principle, is that the process is about the consciousness. The consciousness is what's changed that brings us here. It's not the activity. Yes. 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 Yes.
Hmm? Okay. So consciousness is sarva upadhi nirmuktam.
Yes. Servant means you want to serve and please Krishna. That's the quality of it, but the service, that's about just surrendering to Krishna.
Is it not that when we identify with a particular upadhi, then the performance of the service also becomes easy?
We identify an upadhi, but what about this upadhi? That's why the service will get easier.
Because identification is there, then it's easy to get into the role of that particular service. And then it's easy to
but
perform.
Now, in this, are you, means there's a principle at work here, right? Mm-hmm. And so then, now we're trying to apply that in a detail, right?
Yes.
And so in the detail, then we're finding that it appears to work different or opposite from the principle. So are we trying to resolve that based on the principle? Or are we trying to say the principle is not so important because the detail, how it comes to us, doesn't match?
The principle is important. From that we are going to resolve.
So then one should keep going in that contemplation process of contemplation to how does those definitions then work out so they're balanced.
It's a challenge.
Okay, so because the point is that it's a challenge because we focus on the secondary. We think the secondary is the real thing. Why? Because if one is very good at secondary, that becomes one's identity. Therefore, to give up the identity that I'm very expert at doing things in the material platform, then we're worried, well, what will be my identity? And if there's no identity, then what benefits I will get, what security I'll have, all these things come up.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, even though it's on one sense, it's very quick to understand aspects of the philosophy and the culture, but as far as functioning in an advanced state, meaning of consciousness, it'll be very hard for those who identify with the material results because they're actually good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're good at things, it appears that they're more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
When actually, and by consciousness, they're not. They're just pious.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't tell the difference between spiritual and material, then you'll mistake that piety is spiritual, like we were discussing yesterday. There's a little bit of selflessness, a little bit of this and that, but that selflessness is an identity. It's not actually a nature of just selflessness. It's a nature of piety. That they're pious enough to know that you have to do things in a selfless way, because only selfless work actually gives really good results. So since we're professional, we get good results. Therefore, we have to be selfless in occasions until we get the results. So once we get the results, then we can be proud of them and, you know, maintain it as an identity.
Mm-hmm.
Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that becomes a weakness. So if you don't distinguish that, then it's a problem. And if everybody just agrees that, you know, this is the position that we're at, and then they all just function that way without looking at it, you know, scrutinizingly, then these points will be very difficult. Because the whole basis is on the secondary, not on the primary. Because we take it that if you're not fully 100% conscious of the secondary, then you can't be getting a good result. And not getting a good result, you know, on the external can't be Krishna conscious. Because Krishna consciousness is the best, so therefore this best secondary result, that is actually Krishna consciousness. So it's a faulty logic. You know. So in other words, for one group, they're anarta that they can't do anything right. It gets in the way. Oh, I can't do that. I'm not advanced. I can't, you know, surrender like that. That gets in their way. And for those who think that they're very qualified, that sense of accomplishment, that gets in the way of their devotion.
Mm-hmm.
But one you'll see is externally is making everything organized and managed and it's all happening. And the other one, nothing's happening. But both of them are, you know, not advancing at the same speed. Does that make sense? So, in a world that we look at externals as the main symptom, then it will look like the professional is more advanced in Krishna consciousness. In fact, they will think. In fact, from day one, let's say two people join at the same day. They both know zero about Krishna consciousness, never done anything Krishna conscious and all that. One of them's a doctor, and one of them's like a peon. From nanosecond one, the doctor will think he's more spiritually advanced, and everybody else will think he's more spiritually advanced than the devotee who, you know, his background's a peon. Guaranteed. Money back. You know, it's that sure. And if you get one that's not, now that's rare, that's the advanced devotee. That's special. That they are that qualified, but they don't have the false ego. The other one doesn't have false ego, but he doesn't do anything anyway to have false ego about anyway. So if he has no false ego, that's good. But it's not really a credit. You understand? And then to have that attitude, that's understood. People are professional, they have attitude. That's all. Like I remember hearing he was the head of the Department of Music in the Mysore University. Right? So in South India, that's considered to be a big position in music. And he was talking about another musician who is considered, you know, not having that kind of position, but as a musician, as an artist, I think he was either one of the best or the best. Right? So he was talking to another musician, right? And they were talking about how that guy who's the best, talking about something and about how it's a bit difficult to work with him because he has such attitude. And then the professor, then he pointed out, yes, but he does have attitude. I mean, he was the one that made the point, but he says, but you have to overlook the attitude because he's so good at what he does. So you have to tolerate the attitude, you know, because when he does sit down and start to perform, when everything's perfect to his liking, then the performance is, you know, sensational. You know, so that's heaven. You know, up to that point, every other arrangement is absolute hell. Right? And so, you know, they were just saying that's the way it is. Yes, on the material platform. But on the spiritual platform, it's not that way at all. You know, the six Goswamis. Sanatana Goswami was the prime minister for the Nawab, you know, who was the Nawab of East, you know, of Bengal. So that includes Bengal, East Bengal, the whole northeast, and part of Orissa. Right? And if we take just those two places, those places alone, probably the population in those places is more than the whole rest of India. Possibly. Or one of the biggest populations. Right? Other states aren't as populated, actually. You don't buy this one.
I have no idea.
You have no idea, okay. It is. When they were considering, you know, when the independence of India was coming up, and so what would be the language, a national language, Bengali was actually considered because it had the maximum volume of people that were speaking it. Of any one language, it was the most spoken. So it was considered. But unfortunately, they went with Hindi because the guys that only spoke Hindi, they didn't have the, you know, ability to learn any other language. So in consideration of them, they went with Hindi. Otherwise, it would not be your first choice as far as a language goes in India. No? Okay. How did we get here? The professionals. Being so professional, they can't understand.
Sanatana Goswami.
Yeah, so Sanatana Goswami, he's managing this. And so now he becomes a devotee, and we see is that one of the things of Sanatana Goswami is his outstanding humility. Right? And then when he does sit down, then he puts together Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is probably one of the biggest books you'll ever bump into, right? Other than the complete Oxford Dictionary, then it's probably one of the biggest books there is. And so he puts it, but he has no ego. That's professional. And that you have ego, that's technically a dime a dozen. Does that mean anything to you? Dime a dozen means super cheap. You know? Like if I said, okay, it's 10 pice a dozen. Yeah, so that's how often you can find professionals that have attitude. It's like 99.9999%. And the ones that are professional that don't have attitude because someone else had more attitude and somehow another bumped him out of his position, so he's insecure at the moment, that's why he doesn't have it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So Maharaj, when...
So we have to be very careful about that conditioning.
Yeah. Because when you see in the temples also, you find that because temple is like an organization, and therefore the professionals, you know, are being given...
Of course, it's natural because that's how they're engaged. They should have those positions.
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't they? They're efficient. They get it done. But does that make Krishna consciousness?
No, not necessarily.
It's just like, what's his name? Our frizzy-headed Andran man. He has 50 million disciples.
Kripalu?
No, frizzy. Yeah. 50 million. Now that's an organization. But are we talking about devotional service here? Pure bhakti? No. So that's my point. Everybody's engaged according to their nature. But that doesn't mean that they don't try to develop their personal sadhana. And develop, you know, means in the way of attitude. Because professional means that externally you do everything right. Right? It doesn't mean that you yourself are a nice person. Professional and nice person are not synonyms. Generally, they're in most categories, they're considered antonyms. You know what I'm saying? For those who are looking at more kind of like, you know, community and people and feelings and the liberal kind of things, then the man is represented by the professionals. You understand the man? The man means the government, the bad, whatever is destroying society, the man. That's the professionals. Now it's merging a little bit because, you know, it's just kind of the way to, with, I think with the millennials, they're kind of making it more popular. Does that make sense? Yeah, so one has to be very, very careful about this. Everybody should be engaged according to their nature. So you could have someone who's just joined that after some weeks or months, they're actually a major manager in the, you know, in the yatra's organization because they have that skill. But they're supposed to do that for Krishna. It's not a symptom of advancement. It just means they have more material skill. Yeah. So advancement is one, spiritual advancement is one thing, material advancement is another. And if we look at the reflection, they're kind of opposite. So the better you are at material, there's a good chance you're going to have problem with spiritual. The form of it, no. Right? These professionals, because they're regulated, it's probably for them easy to perform sadhana. The form of it. If they have the attitude, that will be the tough part. Because they've cultivated for a long time this attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's their identity. They don't want to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
You're good?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay. According to this conception, the cosmic manifestation consisting of both matter and spirit is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ive taraha. This cosmic manifestation is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it appears different from Him. In Bhagavad Gita 9.4, the Lord says, "By me, in my unmanifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them." Means he is the person who's not in them. It's Paramatma is there. That is in his Bhagavan form. It's not.
When we say that Mayavadis, they understand Brahman. But do they have the full understanding of the Brahman?
No. Only that aspect of eternity and changelessness.
And all pervading?
Yeah, it's the same. That's
features they don't understand?
That the Brahman is situated on Krishna. That the Brahman is the effulgence of the qualities of Krishna.
Yeah, whatever it's connected directly to Krishna, they don't understand. They only understand the general.
They only understand this much of the general, because they don't understand Brahman is created everything, is the maintaining everything, is all this that they don't is pervading everything. This material energy is Brahman. They don't understand any of that. They just know that there is a concept of Brahman. You know, it's just like the light bulb. You can kind of see it. It's there and it's bright. And that's it. You know, so even the dog can figure that one out. Does that make sense? But that's all that the modes of nature will allow the living entity to know from the material platform. Even though it's Krishna, that's all that's allowed to be known. Right? So, because the material energy can't understand what's beyond it. So the intelligence made of material energy can't understand something outside of its purview. So Krishna, by his grace, allows these two points to be understood. Thus, although someone may say that the Supreme Person is different from the cosmic manifestation, actually he is not. The Lord says, Maya tatam idam sarvam. In my impersonal feature, I am spread throughout the world. Therefore, this world is not different from him. The difference is a difference in names. For example, whether we speak of gold earrings, gold bangles, or gold necklaces, ultimately they are all gold. In a similar way, all the different manifestations of matter and spirit are ultimately one in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekam eva dvitiyam brahma. This is the Vedic version. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. There is oneness because everything emanates from the Supreme Brahman. The example already given is that there is no difference between a gold earring and the gold mind as it is. Right? Does that make sense? That's the point. But because it has different names, because of how it will act, the function that it does and that, but it's the same. It's all Krishna. It's just like your hand, it has a different name than your foot, but it's all you. Does that make sense? Yeah. But because they have different functions, then you give them different names. Right? Now, let's take an animal that walks on the, you know, uses the four legs on the ground. The part that touches the ground, what do we call them? Feet. Right? So the one that touches the ground and it creates locomotion, that's called a foot. And the one that grasps things and, you know, how you say, picks your nose and all that, that's called a hand. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it's not that, oh, the front two are hands and the back two are feet. No, it's whatever's on the ground, that's what's then it's giving. Does that make sense? How it's connected is just a name. But it's just as much part of you as anything else. So because of the function, it's called a hand. Because of the function, it's called a foot. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is it's all Krishna. But because of the difference in function, therefore it has a different name. But ultimately it's all Krishna. So the whole point is dealing with Krishna as a person, you don't have to worry about all these things. All it is that all these things will remind you of that person. Because that interaction with the person, that flavor, that taste, those functions, that's the most important. Because God does all these things just on his own. You know what I'm saying? Is it important you as a person in your relationships that without even thinking about it, your hair grows? Right? No, it's about the personality, the interactions, those things. That's what's important. Right? Yes, no? Yeah. Yeah, so that's it. So therefore the creation and all these things, these just go on because that's his nature. What's important is the interaction with the person. Right? So the whole point is we, first of all, because we've separated between the principal and the secondary, so we've left Krishna out, so we only see the secondary. Those secondary, even though they're the same activities as in the spiritual world, because now the consciousness has changed, now they're material. Then, since we only see material, therefore we talk about the difference between the activities of the spiritual world and the material world. But at some point, the activities are the same. It's the consciousness actually that's different. And then we see, and so it's necessary, as long as we see that this is something to enjoy, therefore it's Maya, therefore I give it up to serve Krishna, then that works. But then if that's what we think is the end of Krishna consciousness, no, it's about the person. And then we see the advanced personality, all this is Krishna as his potencies. Therefore, it reminds you of the person that you're serving. So that's why you don't get in Maya, because everything reminds you of Krishna. Right? But otherwise, for us, it reminds us this is Maya. Maya is not good. Krishna consciousness is good. Therefore, I should be Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness means I do service to Krishna. So we go through more stages. Well, for them, it's simultaneously. It's non-different from Krishna. And so they want to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? They don't have the steps to intellectually go through. That's why their service is spontaneous. So spontaneous means there's no intellectual steps. Does that make sense? You know, if it's connected to Krishna, we call it spontaneous. If it's connected to Maya, we call it whimsical. Like that. You know, we don't say spontaneous devotion, spontaneous material attachment. We don't use that one. So we're all good on all this. Yeah. The Vaisheshika philosophers, however, because of their Mayavad conception, create differences. They say Brahma Satya, Jagat Mitya. The absolute truth is real, and the cosmic manifestation is false. But why should the Jagat be considered Mitya? The Jagat is an emanation from Brahman. Therefore, the Jagat is also truth. Vaishnavas, therefore, do not consider the Jagat to be Mitya. Rather, they regard everything as reality in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the illusion, or the Mitya, is the consciousness of the Jiva, that it's not connected to the Lord. Right? It means ultimately it is, because it's their consciousness, they're the energy of the Lord. But not seeing that, that's the problem. It's not the external. It's the consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is when you're dealing with living entities that only work on secondary aspects, then that is the symptoms, that is the process, that is the goal for them, then you have to show how this point will be very practically applied in secondary activities, right? Or let's say secondary mechanics that are meant to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? So when it comes down to practice, then we'll see the body, mind, and words will be engaged. But actually, the essential point that makes the difference between the engagement of the body, mind, and words, whether it's spiritual or material, is the consciousness. If that's understood, then you can refine and develop the quality of the engagement of the body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. Otherwise, then you'll think, because I did a great job, it's fabulous. Right? So. Okay. Oh, there it is. Okay. Things should be accepted for the Lord's service and not for one's personal sense gratification. One accepts something without attachment and accepts it because it is related to Krishna. One's renunciation is called yuktam vairagyam. Whatever is favorable for the rendering of service to Lord Krishna should be accepted and should not be rejected as a material thing. End quote. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1:2, 255 to 256. Big chapters, huh? Serious chapters. Right, we're used to like 30 to 50 verse chapters, you know? Like that, yeah. The Jagat should not be rejected as Mitya. It is truth, and the truth is realized when everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. A flower accepted for one's sense gratification is material, but when the same flower is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a devotee, it is spiritual. Food taken and cooked for oneself is material, but food cooked for the Supreme Lord is called spiritual prasad. This is a question of realization. Actually, everything is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore everything is spiritual. But those who are not advanced in proper knowledge make distinctions because of the interaction of the three modes of nature. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami says that although the sun is the only light, the sunshine, Oh, that although the sun is, oh no, the only light, the sunshine, which is exhibited in seven colors, and darkness, which is the absence of sunshine, are not different from the sun. For without the existence of the sun, such differentiations cannot exist. There may be varied nomenclature because of different conditions, but they are all the sun. The Puranas therefore say, right? Does that make sense? It means it's all coming from the sun. The light, the colors, the darkness, it's all because of the sun. No sun, then you don't have any of these. Eka, Desha, Stitas, Yagyer, no, Yagyer, Jochna, Vishtarini, Yata, Parasya, Brahmana, Shaktis, Tateidam, Akilam, Jagat. Just as the illumination of a fire, which is situated in one place, is spread all over, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, are spread all over this universe. Vishnu Purana 1:22:53. Materially, we can directly perceive the sunshine spreading itself according to different names and activities. But ultimately, the sun is one. Similarly, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is an expansion of the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is everything, and He is one without differentiation. There is no existence separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No differentiation means it's all Krishna. Then within that, according to the particular function, then there are names. Does that make sense? So then you get the internal, external, marginal, all these different kinds of aspects. But it's all Krishna. But because He's conscious, then everything else is conscious. So even these, all these parts. Yeah. Synopsis of Yogacara's Buddhism. Though Vaibhashika's and Shautrantika's philosophy has been refuted, Yogacara remains ready to fight.
The third school of Buddhism.
Yes. According to Yogacara, Buddha conceded to disciples absorbed in external objects, made a system concerning external objects. This was not his intention, since his conclusion is that only the jnana skanda, cognition, exists. Thus, awareness of an object like a pot is merely cognition. Cognition takes the form of an object. You cannot say that action cannot be accomplished without real objects, since action is accomplished in dreams without real objects. Right? This is all their philosophy?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay.
This is the people who say, if you think very deeply, then you can bend.
Oh, I see. These are those. So it comes from Buddhism. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, without thinking, you can bend the spoon, and it's a lot easier, actually. Even those who consider external objects real, except that cognition has the quality of taking the form of the object. Right? Because Vedanta says that. The mind just takes the form of that object. How else can awareness of a pot or cloth arise? As actions can be accomplished in this matter, what is the need of external objects? So they don't even bother with external objects. Unfortunately, they don't seem to mind the external object called their body. Right?
This is the idealist.
This is?
The surrealist, idealist, and nihilist. So Yogacara is idealist.
Idealist.
And Vaibhashika and Sautrantika were realist.
But in the previous things, it was always talking about idealists, ideas, and
yeah,
idealism.
Presentationalism, idealism. But then that's what Sri Vaishya mentions that. Because this is talking about the awareness, so they have all those kind of things. There's overlap kind of knowledge. It's not like...
Okay. How does internal cognition take the form of a pot or mountain? This does not happen. So this is them speaking?
Yes, Maharaj. This is entire thing is their philosophy.
Okay. Cognition is a revealer. oh, this does not happen. Cognition is a revealer. Cognition has a form since it is possible for a formless entity to reveal anything. Strange, because a formless entity can't reveal anything. How does nothingness produce everything? But, yes. Cognition means, the individual living entity. So they're just saying it doesn't take on the form. It just is that it's a revealer. It gives an indication. So they're taking it a step back. The other ones, yeah.
They call cognition an individual entity or just an awareness?
It seems to be just an awareness. Because according to them, there is no individual entity. Nothing exists. So then, nothing exists. Why have all this philosophy? But they're happy.
But, the concept that cognition has a form.
That's cognition has a form.
Because only if it has a form, then it can reveal things. Because that's what is this thing. That which is formless cannot reveal things.
Okay, cognition has a form. Why does the mind assume various forms if external objects are unreal? This happens because of variety of impressions, vasana. One can understand that the variety in the mind arises because of variety of impressions, since one sees forms in the presence of impressions, and senses an absence of forms in the absence of impressions. Since knowledge and the object of knowledge consistently accompany each other, the object of knowledge is not separate from the cognition of it. The object is actually only cognition. Basically, here's they're trying to say that there are no real objects. There's only a cognition or an idea that an object is there. But that means cognition has to have a form, because you can't have something out of nothing. But then the problem comes is then that falls apart here, is that why is there variety? Because of impressions. Right, so vasana. But where did these come from? Because if nothing's real, then, there's only the thinking process. So where did that come from? What is that? Then that means that's another entity. Yeah, it gets weird. You can see it's getting more and more weird as we go.
They don't think? Or they think too much? What's the problem?
They think too much. That's all they have is thinking. So they have to make the most out of it. Okay, Adhikarana, 4. Right, so their whole idea is that there's nothing out there. The first one is that the external's real. The second one is it may or may not be real, but we're not really worried about it. The third one is it's not real, it's only the mind. But there's form and all these things, the cognition, all this has forms. And I guess when we get to the nihilist, means there's absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Right, that is
the most simplest thing. Yeah, there's just nothing. So you just see it gets more and more nothingness.
When they say that absence of forms, one sense is an absence of forms in the absence of impressions. But then, even if the form is not there, we still have memory. So they don't have this concept of memory at all.
So they don't have
the concept of memory. Something you store.
They don't have concept of memory, but they do remember.
They do remember.
You come in, you get a nihilist Buddhist sitting there, and you have a baseball bat. And then you hit him with the baseball bat. Right? So then, next time you come with the baseball bat, they might move away. So there is memory.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they were true nihilists, they wouldn't move, because there is no memory.
Yes.
Oh, they'll just say, well, we're not so advanced. Okay. Adhikarana 4. Refutation of Yogacara, Buddhism. Abhava Dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.2, 28-31. Adhikarana Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar aims to refute their Yogacara, or Vijnanavad, doctrine. According to them, there is no objective reality, i.e. the external world does not exist, and reality, quote-unquote, is only a state of mind, and that the perceivable world exists in the same way as a dream does. But a dream consists of memories of wakeful perceptions. Hence, dreams and wakefulness are two different states of material consciousness. since the Vedic version is that the wakeful state of material consciousness is also a dream, but it is a dream created by the Supreme Lord. Footnote 39. Everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29. To be. Okay. Waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states, and thus remains as a witness to them. The spirit soul is trapped in the bondage of material intelligence, which awards him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness beyond wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. Becoming situated in me, the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and material mind. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:13, 27-28. So, this is... Okay. But this is just the translation, this is the purport, this is the...
This is the only the verse. Now.
The verse, okay, from Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, okay, I get it. So it's just the verse, directly the verse itself. Okay. It's interesting. That is the secret understanding. It's all an illusion. It's all a dream, but it's real. It actually exists as a dream. It's not that it's nothing. It actually is there. Right? So it's all just part of the Lord's energies.
Just like in our dream, we see objects which are actually exist in true nature, but it's not the way we see in the dream.
Mm.
Yeah. Similarly, this world is also not the way we want it to be.
Yeah. It means we see something, but it's not the actuality of how it should be engaged. You know, it's like the child taking some very expensive object and using it to just play with. You know, that's not actually how it's supposed to be. So in their mind, it's all, it's this, it's that, it's so many things, it's flying through the air, you know, which it shouldn't be. Yeah. Okay. So they're simply taking that point of the Vedic and then taking it to extreme, that then nothing's there. That's what we're meaning. If you take one aspect and then just overemphasize it, you end up with all these funny philosophies.
So in one sense, we can actually correct them. We can tell them, actually, that's what you wanted to say, because you admire, you didn't say it properly. So that's what, this is what is supposed to be a real philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the ways to do it, is you just take what's there and just take it through to what actually is there. That's the easiest. To try to defeat that and then get the faith to replace that, that'll be harder. You just take them through to what it actually is, and then they start seeing in that, and you emphasize how the connection to the Lord. That's why you, if you work above the conditioned aspects, it's actually easier. But you have to, then you have to see it that way. You know, but if we're caught up in the secondary, we're going to then make our position from that, because our identity will be that. Then it's our secondary conditioning against theirs. You know. And so then it always becomes a problem. But here is that you're just taking it and just taking it straight through. Does that make sense?
They speak about dream. Well, this is the real understanding of the dream.
Yeah. So like that, yes, it is a dream, but you have to understand how the dream is working. Just saying it's a dream, okay, but then we're coming up with the wrong conclusion based on this aspect of a dream, like that. And then what they want to gain from it, you know, their concept, why is that the way it has to work out? Why can't it be, you know, work properly? You know, why does it have to be nothing? You know, why not something? Because if this is a dream, that means dream, then that indicates there's reality. Why does the reality have to be nothing? You know, at least according to these guys, you can't get form from nothing. You know, so then where did all this come from? It can't come from the void because it's nothing. Even though it's their philosophy that all the things come from nothing. So, yeah, so you just deal with one thing at a time. Later in his work, the Sutrakar, in Vedanta Sutra 321 and 325, Sanjay Shrishtir Ahahi Para Bhi Dhyanat Tu Tirohitam Tato Yasya Bhanta Viparyayao explains that the Lord is the creator of objects in dreams and that the dreams disappear by the will of the Lord. Also, Vedanta Sutra 326, Deha Yogad Va Sopi explains that the Lord alone is the cause of the waking state with its bodily connection. Hence, even dream objects are real since they are based on real external objects, and a person enjoys results in his dream due to small karmas by the desire of the Lord. Okay, so they falsely claim that the perceptions of the mind arise from material desire. In fact, the reverse is true. Material desire arises from the perceptions of the mind, i.e. the contemplation of external sense objects. Hence, presence of external objects is obligatory for cognition. Right? But they're taking it, no, that the objects come from cognition, but it's the other way around. You know, you're aware of what's there, not because you're aware, therefore, then it creates everything. Right? Does that make sense? So we can see that a lot of this whole kind of fantasy, sci-fi kind of thing, it's all based on, actually, Buddhism.
The magics.
Yeah. All these things, it's just straight Buddhism. Because it's all the mind and all that.
Do we see that with the words, they take the opposite, it means they just under mode of ignorance?
Yes, mode of ignorance.
Exactly the opposite?
Yeah, because they want to become nothing. So what if we're just looking at it even from the external point of view, which mode is that? Yeah, because laziness, nothing happens, that's all mode of ignorance. Something, sense. So even akarma, that's mode of ignorance, because you're supposed to do, but you don't do. So that's mode of ignorance. You know, but that doesn't mean that you're doing something positive. Does that make sense? You know, so a lot of the political positions these days are based on this principle of ignorance. Like that. We don't like something, we do nothing. Right? But the point is that unless that will accomplish, but they have to say how that will accomplish. You have to see that there's differences. Someone's on.
Another thing is like in the aspect of creation. First, creation is like involved the primary creation, and then the jiva when he enters, then he's the part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But here, when they say that. Because of our cognition, the external object is there. They don't see something beyond how the primary creation is there.
Oh, they don't even see the primary creation, really. Because they're thinking that their cognition is causing, basically. So, in one sense, all you're working is with the primary creation. It appears as though it's secondary, but you're actually working that. But then they have to be the creator of this. But then they don't exist, so how can they create it? And nothing else is created. So where does this cognition, where does that variety of these, the things that you see? Because the fun part is, you see the tree, I see the tree, and it's the same tree. You know, it's not, you're going, wow, what a great mango tree, and like that, it's strange, it's in full bloom in this season, and what are you talking about? You know, that's a thorn bush, and there's a dog, you know, how you say, watering it. You know what I'm saying? You see the same thing. Is that, you know, so that means the external object is there, then we're perceiving it. But you have the ability of perception. So it's just going farther that they're the controller and all this and that, because what I think, that's what's happening. You know? So that's the problem. When false ego becomes mixed with things, then it ruins it.
Because this is a non-Vedic school, therefore they will not acknowledge secondary as well as primary creation. Because in Sankhya we see that they at least secondary creation, they have something, but not primary creation, so they don't.
No. Yeah. Well, they don't accept anything. There's nothing.
There's nothing.
summary of Adhikarana 4. Shamshaya. So the doubt. Is it correct to conclude that everything is mere cognition or not? Then their argument. Purva Paksha. Because one can accomplish actions by cognition without objects, as in dreams, and because of accepting this proposition, another element, external objects, becomes unnecessary. It is proper to say everything is mere cognition. But that would be, actually, in one sense, it would be very easy. What are they called? Yoga?
Yogachara.
Yeah,
Yogachara or Vidyanavad.
Okay. So if then it would be very extremely easy to host Vidyanavad Buddhists. You invite them over, and then you don't have to provide anything. Then that they can just sit there and think of all the different nice and wonderful arrangements and the food and, you know, where they're going to sit and where they're going to sit and sleep and all that, while you just have them standing in the middle of your living room, or even better, out on the porch, so they don't get in the way when you watch TV.
You don't even have to invite them to your.
Yeah, they can stay in their place either. Yeah, you just come over and say, "I'm inviting you," and all that. So I'm doing all this within my mind.
Buddhist
monastery. Yeah, no fun.
Maharaj, what is the gain for them and you? Because you give all the credit to cognition.
Nothing. That's the goal. Nothing. So they get nothing, so they attain their goal. No? Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition as follows. Sutra 2228. Na bhava upalabdhehe. Na, not. Abhava, non-existence. Upalabdhehe, because they are perceived. One cannot claim external objects do not exist because of experience. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the Yogacara Buddhist doctrine of subjective idealism. Based on the premise that external objects exist. So the other ones that are idealism, these guys are subjective idealism. I guess they're objective idealism. These are subjective idealism.
The difference is the subjective idealists, they don't believe in reality at all. They don't believe in external objects.
Okay. And the objective idealists, then they're there, or they may or may not be there.
Yeah, the external objects may or may not be.
Okay, and then the nihilist, there's no idealism at all, because they just don't think. They come to the Buddhist perfection of being stone or something. Okay. Sutrakar refutes the Yogacara Buddhist doctrine of subjective idealism based on the premise that external objects exist based on three factors. The perceiver, adhyatma, the thing perceived, adibhuta, and the perception, adidaiva. Well, even use some of the terms. Huh? In cognition, a relation is established in making a specific thing an object of knowledge, and thus illuminating others. Because the mind cuts everything down to one point. So they're simply taking these Vedic points and then misapplying them. Thus, since variegated fours arise in cognition of a person, this itself verifies that the variegated objects factually exist outside of cognition. Otherwise, how would these forms arise in cognition internally, if not existing externally? So that's the difficulties. They think it's all just in the mind, but then, you know, it becomes more of a problem. You see, as they go, there's less and less philosophy. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Siddhanta. One cannot claim that external objects do not exist. Na abhava. Why? Because of experience, upalabdhehe. We are aware of an object different from cognition when we have knowledge of a pot. The wise do not accept statements that are opposed to awareness, right? So here they're pointing out, through shabda, we hear about a pot even though we don't have any cognition of it. And the point is these great souls are not going to accept something that doesn't exist and talk about it as existing. Right? So therefore, here is we're unaware of this pot, but through hearing, we hear of the pot. Right? One cannot say, it is not that I am not aware of objects, but rather I am not aware of anything except knowledge. Sounds good, right? You know, try to put them off your track. End quote. By the force of awareness alone, one must conclude the existence of external objects. Right? Because the awareness, then you apply it on something, it's there. Not that, because I'm aware that produces something. Awareness and production of things are two different concepts. Why they're blending the two together. The point is I'm aware, something in existence I can be aware of. But they're saying, no, because I'm aware, I'm producing it. Right? So they're taking the, you know, how you say, the thinking man is, you know, what is it? I think, therefore I am. You know, the guy sitting there all hunched over and like that, so whatever it is. But then they're taking as a step further. I think, therefore everything else exists. Right. And then, did they conceive of the baseball bat?
Yes. I think further in the 11th canto it comes that when the jiva goes back into the Lord, like though when only the karma sharira remains, and again when the new creation happens, when he comes, then it is like he doesn't have awareness of the, like, you know, how to enjoy. He knows to enjoy. Then the Maya creates all the forms. It's like a jiva seeing a film. Okay. That the dolls are moving. Mm. And then he identifies with whichever, and then all this awareness starts that, oh, now I am the enjoyer. Just like in a movie we see a hero acting, and I am identify with them. So then they are not able to see who is doing that, why.
So that's why in the Vasudev Sattva they're just kind of in a neutral state. Because they want to enjoy, but they don't know how. They can't identify with anything. Yeah, there's nothing there to identify with.
It's also considered like a break.
Yeah. Well, that's the Brahman break. When they're inside, that's the nothingness break. Now you've got the Brahman break, and then now they get back into karma, right? Yeah. Well. When people make the statement, I know the pot, they are aware that there are three factors, an agent, an object, and an act of knowing expressed by a verb, to know. And they make others believe this also. If you claim that only knowledge exists, you become the object of scorn, because then there is no pot. Objects are different from cognition, knowledge, right? So that means knowledge is there, and then there is the object that the knowledge is about. So it's not that the knowledge is that's everything. Right? So they're just taking this difference between karma and jnana, they're just taking it to an extreme that there is no karma at all. While the jnanis, then they'll appreciate that there's reduced. And they're trying to get to where there's nothing. But then when they get to that, then there is nothing. So then the Purvapaksha. If there is something like a pot separate from cognition, how does that object appear in knowledge? Okay. Everything is revealed in one object of knowledge, since all otherness is included in one object of knowledge. All otherness. Great. That would also be really easy to feed them. You just give them the banana peel, and all otherness is in that one object. No? Uttara. That is not so. In cognition, there is a relation established in making a particular thing. And in making a particular thing an object of knowledge, and excluding other objects. As different forms arise in the knowledge of a person, looking at yellow or red objects as his subject, this differentiation within one's knowledge demonstrates the actual existence of differences in external objects, and thereby the actual existence of those objects. Right, because they're thinking that in that one object, everything else is already there. when it actually the mind does the opposite, it becomes aware of something, it cuts out everything else. And so therefore, since you're looking at the red object and the yellow object, then it's looking at the yellow and cutting out the red, then looking at the red, cutting out the yellow. So there's two different objects. Otherwise, the yellow object would be the red object, would be all the other objects. And it would be you also. And then you're perceiving yourself. And then you turn yourself inside out. And then, yeah, it's getting weird here. But that's how they work. Okay. So this is a continuation of the Uttara. You argue that because knowledge?
The Siddhanta.
Siddhanta starts with knowledge. The one above it. You argue that because knowledge and its object accompany each other?
Yeah, because this point is from the synopsis that we have taken. The last line, which mentioned that it is their philosophy, knowledge and the object of knowledge accompany each other. So now that we are defeating. Mm.
There's an Uttara said here.
Yes, it's Uttara.
So this Uttara goes from that is not so down to
until objects.
Coming together indicates their difference.
And thereby the actual existence of those objects. It finishes over there because it's for that.
So then what is this one?
This is Siddhanta again in continuation, which we began earlier.
But I have Siddhanta from the next paragraph where it says knowledge and object of knowledge go together. There's Siddhanta, and here ends the bracket. So is this us talking? This is them talking?
Sorry,
this is nobody talking.
No. Siddhanta is from knowledge.
Yes. So this is still the continuation of the Uttara, our argument. You argue that because knowledge and its object accompany each other, objects are mere cognition. This is wrong, since the two things, knowledge and object of knowledge, coming together indicates their difference. Right? Otherwise, why would they have to come together unless they're two different things? Right? Siddhanta. Knowledge and object of knowledge go together because one, knowledge, is the result and the other, the object of knowledge, is the cause. Though Buddha denied external objects, he also accepted their separate existence. Yat tat antar gyeyam rupa tad bahirvad avabhasate. The form known internally appears like an external object. Footnote 40. This is apparently from Alambana Pariksha by Dinnag and quoted by Shankara from Bhanuswami. Okay. If external objects were not real, he would not use the word vat, like, for comparison. Right? Because the form that the mind takes is like that of the external object. But it's made out of mind. It's not made out of the external object. The external object's made out of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Right? But the mind, when it takes the form of the object, is just made of mind. Right? I mean, of course it has to take up space, but if earth, water, fire, and air, it doesn't have any. It's just mind. So it's like that object, and because of that, you are able to perceive it. But that object is there. The intelligence is there. Cognition is there. All these things are there. Yeah? No one gives an object of comparison which does not exist, such as son of a barren woman. Right? You don't do that. They don't go together. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22, 30-32. Interesting how this section is the 11th canto. My dear Uddhava, your material energy comprising three modes and acting through them manifest the varieties of creation along with varieties of consciousness for perceiving them. The manifest result of material transformation is understood in three aspects. Adhyatmik, adidaivik, and adibhautik. Sight, visible form, and reflected image of the sun within the aperture of the eye all work together to reveal one another. But the original sun standing in the sky is self-manifested, right? It's not because you're seeing it, it's there. It's because it exists, therefore you're able to see. Similarly, the Supreme Soul, the original cause of all entities, who is thus separate from all of them, acts by the illumination of his own transcendental experience as the ultimate source of manifestation of all mutually manifesting objects. Similarly, the sense organs, namely the skin, ears, eyes, tongue, and nose, as well as the functions of the subtle body, namely conditioned consciousness, mind, intelligence, and false ego, can all be analyzed in terms of the threefold distinction of sense, object of perception, and presiding deity. Right? So the adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautik. Right? So the distinction of the sense, that's the adiatmic, that's ourselves. Then the object of perception, that's the adibhautik. But the presiding deity is the ability to see, the sense itself of seeing. Right? Yeah. I didn't say adidaivic? Okay. Okay, this is 41. The BBT purport adequately explains that cognition is possible by the presence of three independent factors, namely, 1, senses, 2, sense objects, and 3, the controlling deity, refuting the Buddhist concept of cognition as being independent. Okay, there's a comma after. I was just thinking, you have the senses, you have the sense objects, then you have the controlling deities like Indra and that, and all they do all day is refute the Buddhist concept of cognition, like that. So when you have them there, then you can actually, you know, do the... English is so weird, huh? Yes.
When we say that these three are necessary, so in Buddhists they have this concept of independence.
I think they mentioned there that they accept these three, but yes. They think it's because we're aware that's why all this is happening.
So they accept the deity, controlling the deity.
I don't think they have a problem with deities because it's all illusion anyway. So what does it matter what you add to it? You know, it's like fantasy, you know. If I'm, you know, is the unicorn white or is the unicorn pink? What does it matter? You know, sort of purple. Okay, yeah, purple also. I forgot about that one.
Then they say that cognition is a realer. That means it is independent.
So cognition is independent.
So cognition is above the deities.
Yeah, because you're above the deities and then you're nothing, so then a nothing is the ultimate. You are that nothing. Army on the way. So this is where Buddhism comes from. If there's nothing, then it'll be peaceful, right? Oh, now they got problems.
We also have problems.
Yes, we also have problems. Yeah, I don't think they have a problem. Especially because you're getting into all these are all derivations of actual Buddhism. So in the actual Buddhism, the original, you generally wouldn't have any need of all these things. Because they don't think about it too much. But the problem comes is that in the derivatives, generally they're mixed with some aspect of Tantra. Like that, because Tantra means you have tantrics that are in the mode of ignorance. Pancharatras, Vaikanas, these don't have any versions in the mode of ignorance. Right? But Tantra has goodness, passion, and ignorance. The others are just, for those in the mode of goodness. So then when you mix it with the Tantra, and then from the mode of ignorance aspect, then they have their deities and this and that and their temples, their worships, their rituals and all that. But in actual Buddhism, there's no ritual, there's nothing, there's no place. It's just, you just wander around.
even they have a deity of Buddha, which they have it, but that is not being worshipped as such.
Yeah, I think they have Durga, they have Shiva, and they have time. They have all three. But, and they're generally, you know, as the, what is it? Is it first canto? It says the ghastly forms of the demigods. They generally use more ghastly forms of them. They don't look very good.
Even Maharaj in Puranas, the Tamasic Puranas, like this, all these aspects are mentioned. The worship Akasha, as like it's more tending towards nothingness. Than
more towards nothing. Yeah. There.
So the Buddhist very easily can take up.
Can take up those aspects.
If their ultimate goal is nothing, why would they speak on a philosophy?
That's our point. We definitely make that point. Them and the Mayavadis, why, what, then why talk? If it's all nothing, if it's all one, then why talk? You know. But the problem is even though technically that might be their philosophy, they are still talking. You know. So I guess that would be another way, is that, you know, when they start talking, he says, you're talking. He says, yeah. He says, but your philosophy says that it's not there, so why are you talking? You know, just be nothing, you know, like that. Okay. Okay, so down to the second one, okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.